Hello, and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. The Trump administration's policies are facing a slew of legal challenges. Illinois' Attorney General joins us to talk about his office's actions. Mayor Johnson prepares for his testimony before Congress, and the stock market plunges on the first day of new tariffs. Our spotlight team has analysis. And in honor of Chicago's birthday today, we explain the history of how the city got its shape. And now to some of today's top stories. The stock market takes a dive today as Wall Street reacts to President Donald Trump's tariffs going into effect. The Dow tumbled 670 points today on top of yesterday's 650-point drop. The NASDAQ is down more than 6% since Trump took office in January, and the gains made by the S&P 500 since Trump's election in November have been wiped out. Trump imposed 25% tariffs on Mexican and Canadian imports while doubling the tariff on Chinese products to 20%, launching a trade war with America's three biggest trade partners. The three countries all retaliated with tariffs of their own. We'll have more on the local reaction to those tariffs coming up in Spotlight Politics. A coalition of immigrant advocates are making the case in favor of the city's sanctuary city policies as Mayor Brandon Johnson prepares to testify before Congress about the issue tomorrow.
We reject these attempts to demonize immigrants and divide our communities. We have our own story to tell and our testimony to give, one that speaks to our deeply held values, reaffirms Chicago's long history of welcoming new neighbors, and rejects the Trump and MAGA plan to criminalize our families and friends.
The Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights, along with several faith leaders, say Republicans are trying to demonize the immigrant community to distract from cuts to the social safety net. The Trump administration has threatened to pull federal funding from cities that protect undocumented immigrants. Preservation Chicago releases its annual list of most endangered buildings in an effort to save them. This year's list includes the Loop's Delaware Building, a landmark that rose from the ashes of the Great Chicago Fire, only to become an abandoned McDonald's location. The Darrow Bridge, originally known as the Columbia Drive Bridge, is one of the few surviving elements of Frederick Law Olmsted's original design for Jackson Park. There that one is. The J.J. Walzer House in Austin, designed by Frank Lloyd Wright in 1903 in an attempt to build affordable housing. Bronzeville's Olivet Baptist Church, which has the second oldest African-American church congregation in Chicago. The Central Manufacturing District Clock Tower, located in McKinley Park. The Western Boulevard Industrial Buildings in the back of the yards. And finally, St. Martin's Church in Englewood. And we have much more on the history of these buildings on our website. Up next, a one-on-one with Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul on his office's actions under Trump's administration.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
There have been nearly 100 legal challenges to the Trump administration's executive orders, all filed in the 6 short weeks since he assumed office. That's according to the digital law and policy journal Just Security. Illinois has joined in on those complaints that range from pushing for transgender rights to fighting for public health care funding. Here now with more is Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul. Attorney General, welcome back. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
How busy would you say this administration has kept your office these last 6 weeks?
Quite busy. And it spans beyond just the past 6 weeks because we anticipated many of the actions would come forth. We began preparing, I say, almost a year ago, not knowing what the outcome of the elections would be, but knowing that we couldn't wait until January 20th to begin to prepare for the types of things that were being laid out, for instance, in Project 2025.
Is this very different, or how would you say this compares to the first 6 weeks of Trump's first term?
Well, I came in halfway.
Halfway through.
And we were quite busy then. I think there were somewhere in the area of 138 lawsuits filed against the administration during the first administration, where we prevailed in about 80% of those lawsuits. So for those of us attorneys general who had the experience of dealing with this before, it served as some preparedness for what we're dealing with now, except that the pace that the administration has taken with some of its actions and the sort of audacity of it, the unconstitutional and unlawful actions, are a bit different from the first time around.
We know that tomorrow Mayor Brandon Johnson is testifying before Congress along with several other mayors about the city's sanctuary status. The state is also considered a sanctuary state, and you've issued guidance to law enforcement on this issue. What's been your advice?
Yeah, and we actually, we've been sued by the Department of Justice along with the city of Chicago and the county of Cook. The state with regards to our trust act and the city and the county with regards to their sanctuary city ordinances. We filed a motion to dismiss today, and basically the same advice that we give to law enforcement is that local and state law enforcement officers offices cannot be commandeered by the federal government to do immigration work. We have ingrained in our Constitution the 10th Amendment that kind of sets up the coexistence of in federalism of state and federal government, and there's authority that supports our motion to dismiss. We've been sued on this before, and the Seventh Circuit has ruled on it before, that the federal government cannot commandeer local governments to do the federal government's work.
And to be clear, you said you just filed that motion to dismiss in the lawsuit today.
Yes, this morning.
Okay. Was there more you wanted to add on that?
Yeah, I want to be clear that since the outset of my administration as Attorney General, I have collaborated with federal law enforcement, including the FBI, ATF, DEA, and Homeland Security. And we've collaborated on all sorts of criminal activity, some activity that might have been committed, acts that may have been committed by citizens, and some acts that may have been committed by non-citizens. And we continue to work towards that collaboration. There's been a framing such that somehow the Sanctuary City or the Trust Act suggests that we would not collaborate on capturing immigrants who have committed criminal acts, and that's the furthest thing from the truth.
You are also working with a coalition of state attorneys general to protect a provision of the Affordable Care Act. It creates the Preventive Services Task Force. First, tell everybody what this task force does.
Well, it's about access to preventative health care. I myself had the warning of my father and my grandfathers who succumbed to prostate cancer. And because of that warning, I had access to preventative health care. That led to my early detection that allows me to sit before you here today. And we believe that all citizens should have that access. And so it's aimed at trying to make sure that folks have access to preventative health care such that they can be the beneficiaries like I am of early detection and live longer lives and healthier lives.
And right now, the case Kennedy versus Braidwood Management, that is before the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. What is your concern if this task force is ruled unconstitutional by the court?
Well, that it'd be devastating to healthcare outcomes for a lot of people throughout the country. The Affordable Care Act has provided access to healthcare and with a focus on preventative health care, not having people seek their health care in emergency rooms and be the beneficiaries of primary care and, again, preventative health care.
You've also sued the Trump administration over the federal funding freeze that the president implemented back in January. A federal judge blocked that order through a separate other lawsuit. But Governor Pritzker still says that funds are still not flowing the way they should be to all departments and agencies to the tune of about $1.88 billion. What more can your office do on this issue?
Yeah, that's a dance that we're going through, right? First off, at the outset, these funding freezes from OMB were illegal. They violate, the Constitution. Congress has power of the purse, and Article 1, Section 8 sets it out in the spending clause. And so we filed suit and got an injunction, and we've since filed motions to enforce because there has been evidence of violation of the court's order. And so we will continue to, as we that comes to our attention, continue to take action.
What are your thoughts on, you know, should the courts rule against you in any of these cases? Because there are a lot of them, and of course there are going to be federal judges on some of these courts that were appointed by Trump, and we'll see his and his administration's perspective.
Well, I mean, you take our very first lawsuit on birthright citizenship. I myself was born to a mother not yet naturalized, a Haitian immigrant. So I am a birthright citizen. That's, again, clear language in our Constitution. It was a Reagan-appointed judge that pointed out that it was a blatantly unconstitutional action and that he could not understand how any member of the bar would come before a court to try to defend such an action. So even the most conservative judges cannot twist the plain language of our Constitution and the laws that Congress have set as well.
You recently gave guidance on diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility in the workplace in a letter that was written alongside Andrea Joy Campbell, the Massachusetts Attorney General. And in it, you write, quote, "Employment discrimination is a serious and persistent problem in the United States. Over the last 5 years, more than 285,000 discrimination complaints have been filed with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission by employees in our states alone. Combating continuing discrimination is a strategic priority for our offices. How do you recommend employees employers or any departments for that matter ensure a diverse, equitable, inclusive, and accessible workplace without running afoul of the federal government?"
Well, first of all, the federal government is suggesting things that are not factual with regards to the law. The case of SFFA v. Harvard weighed in on admissions, whether or not race can be used as a factor in admissions. And so that's settled. I may have disagreed with the opinion, but it is the law, and I respect it as the law. But it cannot be stretched into all of the different things that this administration has suggested to try to outlaw any sort of diversity training, to outlaw any affinity groups or employee resource groups within companies, to try to outlaw outreach to communities that are underrepresented. All of those things are legal. And there have been studies that have supported that diversity is not only a right and moral thing to do, but it's a good business interest thing to embrace. And so I advise those corporations to not be misled and not be intimidated into backing away from initiatives that are legal, backing away from the nomenclature even of diversity, equity, inclusion. Somehow DEI or these words diversity, equity, and inclusion have been made out to be evil words, and that's nonsensical.
All right. Well, you've got plenty of work for yourself. Attorney General Kwame Rule, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Up next, our Spotlight Politics team with what we might expect during Mayor Johnson's testimony on Capitol Hill tomorrow. Stay with us. Brandon Johnson is in D.C. with other Sanctuary City mayors preparing for what could be combative questioning before Congress tomorrow. And as the president prepares to give his speech before Congress tonight, the stock market continued plummeting on the first day of new tariffs. While here in Chicago, a Supreme Court ruling caused a federal judge to toss out 4 of the 9 convictions in the ComEd bribery case. Here with all that, and it's a plenty and more, is our Spotlight Politics team, Amanda Vinicky, Heather Sharone, and Nick Blumberg. So as we mentioned, of course, the mayor, Heather, testifying tomorrow before Congress, going to be in the hot seat with the future of Chicago's protections for undocumented immigrants hanging in the balance. What is at stake at tomorrow's hearing for Chicago's immigrant communities?
Well, Chicago has been a self-proclaimed sanctuary city dating all the way back to 1985. The federal government is suing the city and the state of Illinois to sort of say those laws violate the Constitution, and if you don't undo them, we're going to strip all of the federal funding from the city, which totals somewhere in the neighborhood of $4 billion every year. So there is going to be a lot of pressure on the mayor to defend those rules, to say that they do not interfere with federal agents sort of carrying out their orders if they have a judicial warrant, but that it's necessary to protect undocumented residents of Chicago, to encourage them to seek out the services that they are entitled to and need, such as police protection, medical care, and protection from those who might otherwise wish them harm. The mayor will do it alongside, as you said, 3 other mayors, including New York Mayor Eric Adams. There will be a lot of focus on sort of how he interacts with the Republicans on the committee, but there will also be a lot of focus on Brandon Johnson, who is coming off a series of bruising financial battles in the front of the city council, and this could be sort of the beginning of perhaps his comeback, or another sort of thing that pushes him down a little bit and makes it harder for him to prepare to run for re-election in 2 years.
Now, while Mayor Johnson is preparing to testify before Congress tomorrow, we all know the president. He is preparing to give a big speech tonight, address a joint session of Congress. And one of the things he's expected to address is the war in Ukraine. Nick, both politicians and the public have been making their voices heard in Chicago about this issue. Fill us in.
That's right. Just this past Sunday, there was a rally and a march down Michigan Avenue that featured hundreds of demonstrators, as well as some members of the Illinois congressional delegation, Senator Dick Durbin, Representatives Delia Ramirez, who we heard talking about this issue on the program last night, Representative Mike Quigley, who's been very active as a strong backer of Ukraine. And this came on the heels of that pretty unprecedented combative press conference or press event in the White House with Ukrainian President Zelensky and President Trump and Vice President Vance. And that was even before there was the announcement that there's going to be a pause in funding for, you know, aid to Ukraine. So I think a lot of people are going to be paying very close attention to this. There's a very large population of Ukrainians here in Chicago, numbering in the tens of thousands. So not just, you know, some of our local politicians, but a lot of residents are going to be very curious to see what Trump says.
But by the way, a couple of those congresspeople not going to be in the audience to see it live. Presumably they will be watching from TV. That includes Congresswoman Schakowsky as well as Congressman Quigley have said they're not going to be in attendance.
That's right, they have. And Trump will also, he's likely going to discuss new tariffs that went into effect today, Amanda. And we've seen how the stock market has reacted, tumbling 650 points yesterday, 670 points today. How does Governor Pritzker think this is going to impact Illinois industry?
Well, so he, of course, is out there, his job to stick up for Illinois, and this is certainly something that could cause harm to some of Illinois' biggest industries. You look at manufacturing, you look at things like agriculture, given that Illinois is a very large exporter of things like, you know, beef and soy and corn, particularly to Canada and to Mexico. So then there's this fear of reprisal. Pritzker has, of course, been very out in front attacking President Trump every opportunity that he has, including on this one. And he is taking it to the message that is largely seen as something that hurt Kamala Harris in her run for the presidency, and that was not addressing enough the matter of the economy. And he's saying that President Trump promised to tackle inflation and said this is going to do the opposite. So Pritzker has characterized it as a tax on working families. And by the way, one of the expected consequences, if all of this has you wanting to take a drink, well, one of the consequences that the governor frequently brings up is that it is expected that this is going to cost more if you are the beer drinking type, because that tax on aluminum is going to make it more expensive. So
nobody's going to like that.
There you go. There you go. Especially, no, frankly,
they shall riot in the streets.
Brewers are hurting as
it. Right,
so.
Before St. Patrick's Day.
Right?
No, not in Chicago. Okay, so bringing it back to Chicago, because Heather, Mayor Johnson just appointed one of his fiercest allies to head up the Chicago Park District. What changes can we expect from alderperson Carlos Ramirez Rosa?
Well, he is going to have a big task on his hands. He not only has to oversee 600 parks, he has to see the park district's 6,000 employees. He has never held an executive position, so it will be a whole new set of challenges, including the growing number of unhoused people who have begun to camp in Chicago's parks. We have all seen sort of the footage from Gompers Park, where there is a large tent encampment. City officials will sort of attempt to clear out that encampment this week, but it will be up to now Superintendent Ramirez Rosa as of April 1st to sort of make sure that those tent encampments don't pop up again, while sort of struggling to oversee all of the other issues involving the park districts. Of course, he replaces Superintendent Rosa Escarino, who took over after a massive scandal involving the park district's lifeguards and allegations of sexual abuse.
Okay, Amanda, a federal judge tossed out 4 of the 9 convictions in the ComEd bribery case. This is related to a Supreme Court ruling from last summer, right?
Yeah, it is. And so this was really essentially redefined what bribery is in the eyes of the law. And it wasn't new at the time, but what the judge who had presided over the ComEd for, by the way, a very respected judge, passed away. So now we have a new judge that has said that it's not per se that there wasn't evidence that this was bribery, rather that the jury instructions were such that it didn't address this new definition per the Snyder case as decided by the U.S. Supreme Court. So that is where there could be a retrial. Now, we aren't sure if that is going to happen. Prosecution hasn't said whether they will do that because, of course, there are still those 5 outstanding charges. And so may not be necessary. That already could bring sentences for life for these the ComEd 4. There are, however, Brandis, additional complications. Those 5 outstanding charges, 4 of them deal with the Foreign Corrupt Practice Act, and that is something that President Trump, one of those many executive orders, has said needs to be under review. So there's still a whole lot of uncertainty. This huge major case, as well as perhaps even Speaker Madigan, what this could mean for them ultimately.
Okay. We've got 15 seconds, so we can't really talk about former Mayor Rahm Emanuel, but I thought it was important to bring up because he did make some headlines yesterday at the Economic Club luncheon, and folks can go to our website if they want to know more about that.
Or suspense.
Run into us on the street and start asking us. Okay, that is Spotlight. Thanks, gang. Nick Blumberg, Heather Sharone, Amanda Vinicky. Up next, how did Chicago get its shape? WTTW News explains right after this. Happy 188th birthday, Chicago. You don't look a day over 150. While the candles on its cake have increased, so too has Chicago's size. Nick Blumberg has the story of how a once small but mighty city gobbled up surrounding land to become the city of big shoulders and expanded borders that we know and love today.
March 4th, 1837, Chicago is incorporated as a city of just 10 square miles. That's right, Chicago's original borders were tight. Lake Michigan to Wood Street, 22nd Street to North Avenue. Yeah, that's why it's called North Avenue. Today, Chicago is more than 230 square miles. So how did the city of big shoulders get so, well, big? Starting in the 1850s, Chicago began swallowing up surrounding land. Not through conquest or anything, but mostly through the process of annexation, where suburban residents voted to become city dwellers. The benefits went both ways. The townships got more municipal services. The city got to expand its borders and population. Hello, new taxable residents. The biggest block of annexation happened in 1889, ahead of the Columbian Exposition. Hyde Park, Jefferson, Lake, and Lakeview townships voted to join Chicago, bringing with them a whopping 125 square miles and more than 200,000 residents. But annexation wasn't always smooth sailing. Morgan Park's 1911 annexation vote, overwhelmingly favored by women voters who weren't yet allowed a voice in national elections, was held up in court for 3 years. And that island of northwest suburbs stayed autonomous thanks to stubborn residents and skeptical Chicago politicians. After decades of growth, Chicago eventually slowed its roll. The city started running into suburbs like Evanston and Oak Park with well-established identities of their own. The last suburb to join the party was Mount Greenwood in 1927, and the last expansion was in 1956 when Chicago took over the land at O'Hare Airport. So, that's the story of Chicago's start and how the rest was won.
For more on the city's history, including where its many nicknames came from, check out our website at WTTW.com/news. And that's our show for this Tuesday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and a special time, 10:30. Mayor Johnson is set to testify before a congressional committee on Chicago's status as a sanctuary city. We'll bring you those highlights. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe. Have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to give back to its community in Chicago and beyond.